invest some of your precious time. We all work, and after work activities are a priority at home, and family generally come first. So I just want to say thank you very much. It's wonderful to see the variety of people here. Some people I know, some people I don't. And we're going to have fun tonight. So just to start, I wanted to say that in your agenda, you'll find a lot of frequently asked questions. And what we wanted to do with this was to provide a record and also to allow more time for people to speak during the question and answer period. I won't go into the entire history of what a co-op is, because I can basically say that a co-op is community. And you just look around the room and you can see evidence of that. There's a one-page fact sheet that will tell you about the history of this project, where it started from, how the United States Department of Agriculture got involved, and where we are today. I mentioned in there because we started this in Schoharie, and we ended up here in Hudson because we go where the love is. So there's a lot of love here. There's a lot of business infrastructure. There's a lot of support, and obviously the support's in this room. I'm not going to say too much about myself or the project, because I tried to cover a lot of that by putting it down on paper in words, and there's time for questions and answers later. So with that, I'm going to turn this over to Ellen Thurston, who's older woman from the 3rd Ward, not the 5th Ward, as was erroneously stated. And here's Ellen.
Thanks, Peter. I'm really happy to be here to support this effort. I've talked to a lot of people about the fact that we're trying to start a co-op market, and every single one of them has used the word excited. I'm so excited. So here we all are. I've known Peter Pearson for, I think we figured out it was something like 25 years when we both worked in New York on the same floor in a loft building in NoHo. But here we are in Hudson. Very exciting, the whole thing. I've been here for about 16 years, and when I first came here, there was actually a supermarket called Sam's Supermarket that some of you will remember. I see nodding heads. Sam's Supermarket, when I came, was not much. There wasn't much on the shelves. It was sort of dirty and dusty, and it's on its last legs. But everyone said there's a wonderful butcher there. What was the butcher's name?
Hi Miller,
right. So it was hanging on because of Hi, I think. There were a number of restaurants, which have since closed. The diner was there. There was another small restaurant on Park Place. There was the Pizza Pit next to the Opera House. Very good pizza, by the way. And various other places, like, was it called the Mariners Coffee Shop? And the pork store, remember the Italian pork store? Well, most of those are gone. We now have Peter calls corner stores, delis here and there. And about 2 or 3 years ago, I decided I was going to write an article, do a little survey on if I lived in Hudson and didn't have a car, as many people don't, and I didn't have a bicycle, and I had to put together my food as best I could, would I be able to do it? And I proved that you could do it, but that you might not eat very well, especially if you didn't have a good job with, you know, plenty of income. And also, my survey was that I was going to be able to feed myself without doing takeout and without going out to restaurants. I found that there was no fresh meat or fish to be had, very few vegetables, except in the summertime there wasn't a thriving farmer's market at that time, but since then, we have a great farmer's market. The location where Lily and Lou is was, from time to time, someone would try to open. There was a fish store, I remember, and that would be open for a couple of months and then would go. So it was hit or miss. Town and Country was there. Are you familiar with that store that's down on Dock Street? That's right. Which is mostly wholesale. And it's like a party store, I think, more than anything else. But I think you can get frozen meatballs and things like that. So I'm wrong about there being no meat, because that was there. But I went to every source that I could think of. And the corner delis each seemed to cater to a specific neighborhood. There was the Bangladesh store, I think of, on the corner of 3rd and Columbia, I think it is. There's Paulette's West Indian food. Sam's, which is on the corner of 1st Street, I think, which seems to cater. I mean, it has baby formula and, you know, disposable diapers and things of that sort. So each catered to their own neighborhood. And I looked at the prices of two items. One was Scott's toilet tissue, and the other was Cheerios. And I think, you know, those are things everybody needs. The prices were pretty high. I mean, you can find pasta and jars of spaghetti sauce and things like that. But there was, at that time, no bakery. Now we seem to have two bakeries at least. No access to vegetables or fruit. No bananas. No lemons. that's my test. And no cottage cheese. Things like that that I rely on. So, and I do have a car, and I go out to the supermarket maybe two or three times a week because I've forgotten something, or I need cat food, or whatever. CVS is a source of food for some people. The store called Fresh Farmer, I think in the 500 block, occasionally has things like bananas or tomatoes. Maybe I've seen a lemon there too, I'm not sure. But the fact of the matter is that we need better sources. I'm not telling you anything you don't already know. But and things have looked up from time to time. Old Hudson has expanded what it's selling, and but their prices are pretty high for a lot of people. We have two bakeries, as I said, and we have a wonderful farmers market. And Migliarelli was open for a while. So that's my story. I think of that a co-op market could fill a real void here, and I'm eager to see it going and flourishing. And I think I was longer than 5 minutes. I'm sorry.
Hello. My name's Anna, and I'm here. I work with the Hawthorne Valley Farmscape Ecology Program, and I was invited here because I've been working on a community food assessment project in Columbia County, so actually a vendor at a farmer's market sort of connected me up with Peter, and I'm really happy to share a little bit of that community food assessment project as it relates to Hudson and stores, but also Peter asked me to talk about what a food desert is, because the U.S. Department of Agriculture has designated Hudson a food desert. So I will speak a little bit to that, and I will sort of say first, though, that it's a term I'm not completely comfortable with, so I'll also tell you why. And then I'll share some of the results of the community food surveys that I've done last year and this year in Hudson. To start with the food desert question, what is a food desert anyway? it has many different definitions. There's no one single definition, and there's a lot of debate in the food community around the term right now. And generally, it just means areas where it's difficult to access healthy or affordable food. And that's sort of kind of the general definition. And access is kind of a difficult term to understand or to explain. So I kind of like to sort of say that it's not just physically accessing, which, you know, has to do with being able to get places, whether you have a car or not, or there's public transportation, but it's also things like financial access, whether food is affordable, cultural access, whether people feel comfortable shopping places or can find the types of food that they're looking for, and other types of kind of basically barriers to people having easy, convenient access to healthy and affordable food. And the reason that I think food desert has become a useful term in some respects is it helps to identify areas where, or situations where there's different access for advantaged and disadvantaged economic communities. So an example, like the classic example, would be an inner city area that doesn't have a supermarket or has a supermarket that has higher prices than the suburban counterpart and has different, you know, types of maybe convenience stores or other access that aren't as diverse or as affordable. So that's kind of one way of thinking of a food desert. The kind of and one important aspect is that idea of economic disparity in accessing food. But another kind of I think relevant understanding for a food desert has to do with the shift over the past decades, and this relates to what people have been talking about with Sam's used to be here. So the shift to away from having small local grocery stores to having supermarkets that are concentrated in areas and maybe super centers. And so in Columbia County, I know over the past, you know, 3 decades or so, that shift has happened where there's been local shops and grocery stores in towns that have closed down, and those folks then end up shopping in the Greenport supermarket system and having to travel a great distance. So that's related more to issues like globalization and the concentration in the food system and the distribution system. So I wanted to mention those two. And then when the USDA talks about Hudson being a food desert, what they are specifically referring to is a combination of criteria, both low income. And by low income, they mean a 20% or higher poverty rate in a community, and low access. And by low access, they mean that a substantial number of the population in that area is a mile or more from a supermarket or a large grocery store. So it's a very specific definition that they're using. And in Hudson, it's certainly the case, and there's 2 census districts that are designated food deserts, and so it's the case that in the southern one, I don't know what their titles are, but in the southern one, about 75% of the people are a mile or more, and in the northern one, it's about 50% from a supermarket. And then the other factor in Hudson and in many communities that is related is the issue of having a food, having a vehicle, households that don't have access to a vehicle. So it's about 28% of the households that don't have, that are low access, don't also have access to a vehicle, so that are more than a mile. So that sort of is a compounding factor. The reason I'm uncomfortable with the term food desert is because it focuses on lack rather than sort of all the wonderful, great things going on and the energy in a community and the great resources that are available. And I think that Hudson has many great examples of wonderful things going on. You already mentioned some, the farmers market and community garden and a lot of really diverse corner stores that have a lot of valuable products and farm stores and other sorts of things, restaurants. So there's certainly not a one thing that food desert doesn't mean is that there's no food in it. It's just talking about specific types of full kind of grocery variety. And the other reason I'm uncomfortable with food desert is it kind of tends to frame the solution as being having a supermarket come into a town or having a large grocery store. So, you know, if, for example, there was a small co-op was existed in Hudson, we might still be classified as a food desert under the current definition of food desert. So it doesn't necessarily tend to lead towards community-driven ideas for solutions. So, which is kind of my transition to the community food survey that I conducted last year and this year at Flag Day, which was just a way to see what people were thinking and some food habits. So I just wanted to share, hopefully I have time to share maybe six or so results from that, which is kind of a way to reflect back a little bit what people in Hudson are thinking. So I asked, for example, last year, are you satisfied with the availability of fresh food in stores near your home? And about half the people said that they were not. I asked, how far from home do you travel to the store where you usually buy your food? And about 80% travel over a mile, so over that 1 mile, you know, magic designation number. And that's higher than, obviously, in the USDA, you know, the percentage that are deemed low access. And of course, it's about where you usually shop may not be the first supermarket that you come to. So I also asked if people shop at farmers markets or farm stands. And it was really wonderful to see that about 85% of the respondents do shop sometimes or often. And that, I think, again, speaks to that vibrant food community that does exist. This year, just a few days ago, some of you might have seen me. I did a dot survey at Flag Day, and I have some very preliminary results to share. I asked, in summer, where do you primarily get your fresh produce? And by the way, this is all for Hudson that I'm sharing, the results specific to Hudson. So we were really surprised to see that over 50% of people said that they got it directly from farmers in some context, such as a farm stand or farmer's market. About 36, like a third, said supermarket. And then there was a very small percentage for home gardens, and then about 5% for small groceries or co-ops, which kind of illustrates that that's not really a presence currently right now in the Hudson food system. And we also asked those people if the places where they were currently shopping was where they would prefer to get food. And about 100% of people said yes for gardens and direct from farmers and small groceries and co-ops. But when you looked at the people who were shopping at supermarkets, a little under half said that that's not where they would prefer to get food. So I think this just sort of reflects back some of what is maybe in this room right now in terms of what people are thinking and the opportunities that might exist. And finally, I asked if people felt that if food, if people thought that food produced in or near Columbia County was too expensive. And so the result was that about, it was very mixed, about 40% said yes, about 60% said no. And I think that's really important to sort of keep in mind that mixed community and mixed thoughts on that and the importance of kind of addressing affordability in the discussions that happen around food in Hudson. So finally, just want to share, that's a little bit about Hudson, what's going on. I just want to kind of mention a couple of things about the larger agricultural community in Columbia County, because much like Hudson has sort of some interesting, vibrant things going on, so does the rest of the county in terms of agriculture, and there's a lot going on. There are over 500 farms, and there are many, like about a quarter of those are marketing directly to consumers, so are, and many of those are marketing right here in Columbia County in different ways. And I went around last year as a study and looked at where you could find locally produced food in 23 different types of retail locations that ran the gamut from convenience store to, you know, farmers market. and found about 100, over 100 local food producers and in this county, and that's just the number that I happened to find. So there's a lot going on with farmers markets and farm stands and the rest, and so that's an exciting thing to interact with the local agricultural scene as well. And that's all. Thank you.
All right, we're going to start the open discussion part of the meeting. But before we begin, I want to just make a couple of comments about sort of the process here. One is to that when we have a mic with a very long cord on it, so we ask that you use that so that it can be picked up for WGXC. Just a couple of ground rules that'll be useful to you. As people are making comments and asking questions, when you take your turn to ask a question, follow the motto of good meeting behavior, which is tag along. Don't repeat an entire point that somebody else has already made. Refer to it and then say, I want to add something to that. And it cuts down a lot. It's sort of like unnecessary paper that gets thrown away. This is unnecessary words in the atmosphere. And brevity is wonderful. You know, where one word will do, use one word. And I don't think we'll have any trouble at this meeting with this, but I'll just say it so that should we have any impoliteness break out, we'll know about it. There's no ad hominem comments about anybody in the room. Be factual and to the point. And then finally, no speechifying. So now finally, I've said that twice, three times. Finally, when you get up, it would be very useful if you, and I encourage you to stand up, because standing up leads to brevity, believe it or not. Identify yourself so that we'll know, who you are, because although I know some small fraction of the people here for my 2 years, I don't know everybody by a long shot. That's probably the only other thing. Now, and then finally, keep the mic in front of your mouth so that you don't turn away like that, and then come back, because while you're away, you're away. I just want to add one little personal thing, which I forgot about. When Ellen Thurston, it's always a danger to be walking around in Hudson when Ellen Thurston is walking the street, because she's likely to ask you to do something. So she saw me and came over and handed me the flyer for the meeting and so on. And I said, fine, I'll pass it around. And I put it on the below third business group listserv. And then shortly after that, I got a phone call from Peter saying, will I be the facilitator? And I said, fine. And one of the things I didn't mention at the time was that it's not ironic, it's just a little connection here that goes way back in my life. Back in 1969, I moved to Cambridge, Mass, and was one of the founding members of a food co-op in Cambridge, Mass, which started out of weekly distribution of bags of food. We would go to the Chelsea Market, pick it up in a U-Haul truck and bring it back and distribute it, and then ultimately a storefront. And that food co-op, in varying names, continues to exist to this day in Central Square, and also actually owns the food co-op in the Brighton section of Boston. So I have a soft spot, shall we say, in my heart for food co-ops. All right, well, with that excessive extra note, let me, you want to make a, so, yeah, let's.
My name is Ed Reisner, and I noticed in your fact sheet it says it'll take $185,000 to get this thing off the ground. And my question is, I assume you're planning to raise that through grants. How much money have you presently raised? What grants are in the pipeline? And it's supposed to be a for-profit corporation, so I'm assuming if you can get it started, the business plan is going to continue along, right?
Yes.
Peter, stand up.
The answer is yes. But seriously, I'm the grant recipient now, meaning that my pitifully small salary is being paid for by the USDA, Risk Management Agency. In terms of grants in the pipeline, we're working on that. We need ideas. We need connections. We need money. And membership fees are not the way to fund a co-op. We need financial astuteness. And I'm a good coach and I'm a good collaborator, but I'm a miserable financial person. So we need all the help we can get.
So does that mean that of the $185,000
that you say you need, right now you're looking to raise $185,000?
Correct.
Is there a target starting date for this co-op?
When we get 200 members.
After you get $185,000.
Well, you may know this from starting a small business yourself or being in a business. You have a million balls up in the air at the same time, and if you're living under the right kind of star, everything happens at the right time. So we're in that way, we're kind of feckless dreamers. But it's worked out so far, and that's why we're having community meetings like this, is to get out the word, because we need to stand on the shoulders of a lot of people. Mm-hmm. As it's detailed in the agenda, the frequently asked questions, area memberships and co-ops range from about $100 to $150 for one membership. And we're looking at that range, recognizing that some people can't afford to pay everything all out at once, and we would spread that out so you could have a layaway.
You need the mic.
Hello, everyone.
What's your name?
William Hughes, Jr. I live at 307 State Street, Hudson, New York, and I'm also the Fort Worth supervisor. I just want to talk a little bit about the supermarkets and the history. Outside of Sam's, if people remember, we had AMP and also we had Grand Union, along with Sam's. And as I was growing up, Sam's actually was a really thriving, we saw it as a supermarket, really. It wasn't a supermarket, but it was a great market. And High was not only the butcher, but the owner. And you got your meats there and your produce there on a specific request. You can go in and request hamburger, and he'd grind it for you right there. So that was great. But we also had B-Mart, which was up on the corner of Fifth and Warren. We had a farmer's market, which was in a store. We had a whole host of people that came and tried to start these types of businesses. And it seemed like the price point is what killed them in this community. They just weren't able to compete with a Price Chopper and shop right on the price point. And for most people to know, with the medium income at Hudson somewhere at around 24,000, close to half of what the outlying towns in the county is, people who are on food stamps needed to get the biggest bang for their buck. So they would travel the extra 2 or 3 miles to go to a shop right where they could get 4 tomatoes instead of 2 tomatoes locally. So with this co-op, my question is, how do we propose to keep that price point down so it is competitive so that people won't have to travel as far out of town to get the bang for the buck?
Another very good question, because what people need to realize is that when you run a grocery store or a food retailing operation, we're shoppers too. We have to get the best wholesale price so we can turn it around and make just a tiny bit of profit for it's profit for the membership. It doesn't go into any one person's pocket. So pricing competitively is something that's a real challenge, and we intend to meet so that we have the business. Because if we don't do a good job, the people will tell us and they won't come.
I know you said don't come back, but I did have to make one point. For Columbia County, they have a program.
Columbia County has a program called Columbia County Bounty, and it's almost sort of a co-op type of program, but it's really geared for farms in this county to sell directly to the restaurants, and that's something that you guys might want to know about.
So, why are we wanting the woman in the
My name is Wendy. I'm not going to stand up because I'm on crutches. To follow up on the last gentleman's just sort of thoughts in terms of affordability, I guess there's a couple of things. One is I've been part of a food co-op before, one of the largest of a certain model, a very successful model in Brooklyn. And a big part of keeping costs down was that everybody worked some sort of a share. And I wondered if there's any sort of looking at whether people can have at least an option to work in order to get a discount, a further discount off of whatever they're purchasing. And secondly, I know a co-op like that actually goes out and they will offer advice to new co-ops. And I don't know if they'll come this far, but I'm sure they'd get on the phone with you and discuss it.
Honest Wait has already been down and talking with us, because one of the responsibilities in the co-op world is that each co-op is responsible for starting another co-op.
Identify where Honest Wait is. Everybody might not know.
Honest Wait is the food co-op in Albany. We've also received support and advice and resources from the Troy Co-op Pioneer Market. So we're part of a world here. This is not some off the truck wacko idea that just fell out of a tree, because we're part of a world, and in that world we have connections and we have help and assistance. We don't have to reinvent the wheel.
Sorry, maybe I missed it, but could you just define what a co-op is? Because I don't think people know exactly what a co-op is, and we're already starting to talk about details with us.
That's a good point. As I said before, a co-op means community, and it means that everybody has a voice that's a member. Everyone has a voice in the governance of this entity, and you are a part owner of this entity. And when I say entity, it's because co-ops can exist for many reasons. There are food co-ops, there are banking co-ops, most federal credit unions are co-ops, Agway is a co-op, Welch's Grape Juice is a co-op, and on and on and on. And in your agenda, there's a little block on the right that will direct you to a website that tells you about the history of co-ops. I didn't want to spend a lot of time because the information is out there. To get back to your question about membership, what we tend to do is copy what works. And what works in Albany, what works in Park Slope, and I've been a member of that co-op also, what works in Troy is that the members have to be involved. You need to tell the management what you want to see on the shelves, who you want on the board of directors, how you want things run, what the hours are. This is your deal. And part of it being your deal is you can reduce your grocery bill a lot by performing work hours in exchange for a big substantial reduction in your grocery bill. There are some, well, let's see, the one in Albany, I think the reduction is 11%. So if you give so many hours per month, they take 11% off your grocery bill, and that's substantial. We're going to offer the same thing, because that's a way to keep costs down, is to use volunteer labor. But it's not just anybody from the membership. Members go through training and orientation. So it's all very carefully structured, so everyone knows what they're doing.
Hi, Carol Clark.
Stand up.
I was wondering what are the sizes of the communities that support the co-ops that you're using as a model for Hudson? You know, in other words, you know what our population is. So I'm curious to know what other cities or co-ops you've looked at that have an analogous population?
Specifically, we've looked at a co-op in Cody, South Dakota, that has almost exactly the same demographic as here in terms of agricultural and urban mix, art galleries, bars, churches. We've been very careful to match apples to apples because we use their pro formas and financial projections as a basis for our own and our business plan, because we don't want to just have hot air projections. So your question is very good. And then once we have that established baseline, we go to places like Troy and Honest Weight and pick certain parts of their demographic. For example, Albany at Honest Weight is kind of the worst case scenario for a co-op in terms of parking. There's almost, if those of you who've been there know that, there's almost no parking. Access is restricted, to say the least, and there are 3-foot potholes. It doesn't seem to matter. So we look at other co-ops both for positive and negative things, but your point is well taken that we need to look at things that are equitable.
My name is Linda Hopkins. I have been to the Honest Way Co-op, and if it was closer, I would travel there. It's an incredible community, and I am so excited, to use that word, that we might be able to create something like that here. I have a couple questions. Well, one question, which is, have we really looked at why all those other food distributors that we've talked about have failed in Hudson? You know, those, that farmer's store that was on the corner of 3rd and Warren that is now gone. It lasted barely a year. You know, so I know price is an issue, but what are the, you know, the broader issues? And then my other comment is just a wish. We talk about local foods. I am so excited by the idea of being able to easily purchase local foods. It's not always easy to get to the farmer's market. And CSAs are great, but you can't always afford and you don't always want the food that's possible. And the other piece is bulk. You know, if we could truly purchase on our environmental ethics, the stores that are available to get to that sell natural foods, they have intensive packaging. Natural foods have gone, you know, popular, and everything is prepackaged. Everything is not, it's going away from the mentality that created it. So if we keep that in mind.
Well, if I could just address the last part first about bulk. We really believe in that because I hate paying for packaging. It's ridiculous. And it's oftentimes the bulk items are equal to or better than. So I share your wish. Remind me what the first part was.
The first was just, has there been a study of why it's failing competitively in Hudson?
I can give you my opinion, and I hope other people would chime in because I don't know everything, even though I act like it sometimes. I don't believe those previous undertakings were successful because they didn't reach out to their customers. They didn't have the ownership of the members. If I ask you what you want on the shelf, you're going to tell me. Did the ShopRite ask you? No, you have to kind of, you know, go along with their choices. So I think that's why the co-op in Hudson has a really good chance of success, because you're part of it. It's your store. You're going to decide.
Over here.
Hi, I'm Don Moore, 452 East Allen Street. Just a follow-up, I think that the failure of Migliorelli's was actually a success because it had nothing to do with the audience, with the clientele. It had to do with some internal problems. I think the fact that it lasted as long as it did was a good sign, as is the farmer's market of what's possible. I wanted to follow up on Ed's earlier question about financing, because you seemed to sort of indicate that you didn't have a plan, but now you have talked about a business plan. And my question is specifically about the model of other co-ops, whether it's for-profit or not-for-profit. I mean, you had said you want to make a profit. Well, lots of nonprofits want to make a profit, so you know, you can continue to stay in business. But I'm a little perplexed by the notion that you need, you know, about what kind of money you're looking for to come up with this 185 or so thousand in order to get your business plan in operation, and what, whether it's a for-profit or a not-for-profit, because I think it seems to me that's one of the sort of clearer decisions you need to make early once you have a sense of mission, which you clearly do.
I'm not sure what you want me to answer first.
Are you thinking of a nonprofit model or a for-profit model?
No, we're thinking of a for-profit model because we want to run this as a business. And many nonprofits are run that way, but the ethics and the morals and the operating principles within the co-op community of a shared mission are much different than an ordinary retail. And we try to ascribe to a higher ideal.
That sounds more like a nonprofit than a for-profit.
We're for-profit.
Good ideas.
My name is John Friedman. I'm only chiming in here because I was a lawyer who put the papers together. My name is John Friedman. I'm the lawyer who put the papers together for the co-op. So let me chime in. A cooperative structure in New York State is kind of a hybrid. It is a for-profit business, but the primary purpose of a cooperative is not the earning of a profit. It's the benefit to the cooperative membership. So the law anticipates that you will make some money. I don't think that realistically you can expect to make an awful lot of money. But it also treats cooperatives as not-for-profit. So it's something of a hybrid. And a not-for-profit has another benefit for its membership, which is that it can issue its membership interests and take in loans from its members and from third parties without that paper being considered security. So it's a very low-cost way for a community-oriented business to do business with a lot of flexibility. If you don't make a lot of money, or you don't make any money, you're not going to be forced to shut down the way that the government will force most for-profit businesses to shut down if they can't make money after a certain period of time. On the other hand, I'm sorry?
Like a bank.
Something like a bank. On the other hand, if you do make some money in your primary business, which is being a grocer, which if you were a not-for-profit and you made any money, you'd be in all kinds of trouble. You wouldn't be a not-for-profit anymore, and you'd owe a lot of people a lot of money. The cooperative form is very flexible, and I think that's why it's perfect for this type of application. And it's also being used in Philmont, and fairly effectively. I'd say that they're about a year to a year and a half ahead of you here in Hudson, or us, because I live here too, and I think this is a fantastic idea, personally, for my own reasons. And I hope that answered your question.
Hi, my name is Mark LaCoy. I live in Hudson, and I read the number one here, and I'm just wondering what maybe a few of the properties that you're looking for in Hudson, and how is there any guarantee that you'll be in the Hudson city limits?
Well, we're going to be in Hudson because that's where the store is, that's where the member owners are going to be. It wouldn't make any sense to be elsewhere because in looking around about where to place this, I looked at existing business structure. I use this expression a lot, we have to stand on the shoulders of other people. And unless there are banks and bars and churches and art galleries and reasons for people to be on the street, a co-op doesn't have much of a chance of success. Hudson has got a lot of this infrastructure already in place. Hudson's business environment is extremely mature in a way that we don't have to come in and say, well, we're going to be an economic engine for Hudson. Hudson could certainly use the additional business, but it doesn't need it to survive as a city. That's the answer, I think, to that part of the question. And then about the actual sites, We're negotiating and looking and examining and comparing, and I really can't reveal every aspect of that right now.
So the only guarantee is that it's a good idea.
Well, I don't understand by guarantee what you mean.
Well, if you found a place, it didn't work in Athens. Maybe it's in Athens.
because Hudson didn't work. Oops. Or maybe it's in Greenport after all.
We're not looking at that. I mean, if it helps, you have my word. I don't plan on doing anything, but you're
certificate of incorporation.
Thank you. The certificate of incorporation requires us to be in Hudson. Thank you, Mr. Attorney.
Down here.
Hi, my name's Heather Campbell. I want to follow up on the comparable food co-op question. It seems like we've looked at a lot of things. Troy, Albany, obviously, scale and size are very different there. You mentioned one in North Dakota, I think. I'm curious, in looking at all of the different food co-ops that are successful out there, kind of how many besides North Dakota did you see that could be considered comparable, i.e., what can we look at to determine what our potential success rate would be? How many out there are sort of our size, of our scale, with our income differences and disparities, to give us an idea of is it us in North Dakota the two striking the front, or would we be one of like 200 similarly sized, potentially successful? The answer is 6.
Okay.
And that brings up another point. And
wait, repeat the answer. No, I didn't hear the answer.
Oh, I'm sorry. We were doing sign language. I thought you could read my mind. We looked at 6 co-ops, and I'll be happy to give the business plan out to those who are interested. But each co-op is unique in a lot of ways. You can look at demographics, and you can look at traffic patterns and how much market basket transaction has to occur. But from this point forward, this co-op ceases to be some generic idea and takes on Hudson's gloss on it. It takes Hudson's imprint on it. So it's up to all of us to make this into Hudson's co-op, not just some generic demographic. So
we're down front here. While the mic is being passed, I realize I've forgotten a very important point. We're sitting and having our meeting in this church, and this church needs funds to keep itself afloat. So I'll point out that back in near the back, that back door and over the front door are a couple of donation buckets, and it would be very friendly and helpful if you would toss a couple of dollars in there on the way out the door so that this church can continue to operate and host meetings of this sort. So with that, whoever has the mic. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm Stephanie, and I'm new to Hudson. I think being new about maybe 2 months a year, the only thing the community so far is missing for me is a co-op, and I'm very excited about some of the new elements that are coming to this community. So I feel like the definition of co-op in this room has been pretty vague. For me and the co-op, the 3 co-ops that I've been part of are Food Conspiracy Co-op in Tucson, Arizona, the Lexington Co-op in Buffalo, New York, and the Plattsburgh Co-op. And part of the definition of cooperative membership is that you are a member and a partial owner, and that there's a profit-sharing component, which I didn't see in the definition of cooperative. I think that's a huge incentive for a cooperative community. So I have questions about profit sharing and, you know, ownership, ideology, and those kinds of things. And anything you could say to that. When telling friends that work at these co-ops about the new co-op in Hudson, there was like a lot of excitement from them just to hear about more cooperative business, because the more cooperative businesses that exist nationally, globally, you know, the better it is for all the local cooperatives. And there was, nervous. You get nervous when you speak in front of them. There was excitement from the staff at these co-ops, and they were excited to support a new co-op financially with some kind of donation. So reaching out using the co-op directory to other co-ops to fundraise for this co-op.
That was a good idea about using co-ops to fund other co-ops. There's something called the, if I can get it right, Food Co-op Initiative that exists just as a loan fund to provide funds for new startup co-ops like ours. You asked me to speak about the issue of membership. Well, everyone who is a member is an owner. And there are as many shares to that as there are members or owners. In terms of profit sharing, I really wouldn't want to get into that right now because I don't want it to sound like this is an equity situation where you can cash out and make tons of money in 3 years, because this is not. This is managing a dollar throughout the community very carefully and very conservatively. And if there's profit left at the end of the year, it is distributed amongst its members.
Christina Malasoff here, who was in on actually getting a $186,000 USDA grant, which went into a market that was on where Musica currently is, and that market is no longer there, which kind of begged the question of how much it involved the community. And I wanted to address what Anna was talking about involving portions of the community, which is very diverse, and also there's a whole marginalized section of the community. I noticed that there's nobody that I recognize really from the high rise. I might be missing somebody here tonight. And I know that I'm very happy that there's a large portion of Bangladeshis here. But I also notice whenever I go to the farmer's market on Saturday, I rarely see people of color buying anything there. And there's this whole issue of perception of whether these things are affordable. Like, what's going to pull people in from the high rise? Are we really going to make that effort to reach out? It's difficult enough because we're also fighting against an idea of what food is. And foods, sometimes fresh foods, aren't really seen as being food to certain communities. And that's why we have problems with diabetes and obesity. But then I also know that we have a community garden where a lot of people from the Bangladesh community and also the Haitian community recognize what fresh foods are because they're out there growing their food. But there are not that many people buying food from local farmers. So how do we cross that bridge? And are we going to really make that effort to...
That's it. Somebody wants to. Was that a question or just a statement?
A little bit of both.
I would love to be able. Presuming I'm the general manager of the co-op, I would love to buy from CSAs. I would love to sit down with a room full of farmers and work out pricing on produce. Local's where we need to be. Local is sovereignty, it's credibility, and it's nutrition. It's better nutrition. And if I can buy Ellen Thurston's green beans, I know I'm not going to get sick from that food.
Right. But... are we going to reach out to, are we going to make sure that the flyers get down to the high rise and educational component so that people know
yes.
that this is for everyone in the community, not
yes.
just a certain sector?
Now, this, you can't walk into this co-op and it look like a club. Because if it looks like a white club, it's not going to work.
I have a very simple question. My name is Ruth Tamaroff. I live at 209 Warren Street. My question is a membership for each person, or is it for a family? What's a membership?
It's an individual membership that if you want to give it to somebody in your family, that person can take the card and come and shop.
So it would be a family membership?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Where is it back over there?
Hi, I'm Lauren, and I live in Germantown. I just want to say I also get really nervous standing in front of crowds of people with a microphone in my hand, but my name is Lauren, and I live in Germantown. I'm also really interested in your question, and if that can come up again. I think it's more than just a statement. I think it's something that you're actually asking to strategize and help figure out, and I think that it needs to be addressed more, so I just wanted to say that. I am an herbalist and a medicine maker, and I believe wholesome food is really important, and I also believe that weeds are medicine, and so I'm interested in wondering if people are interested in having a natural health section in the co-op, and if they are, I'd like to just volunteer my time and the skills that I have, and as well as seeing what other people in the community have skills in terms of natural medicine and offering that at the co-op and offering access for education and workshops, like learning how to better take care of ourselves together as a community. So I'm interested in that and also willing to talk about potentially collaborating. Thanks.
You're hired. Now that you're the chairperson of a committee, please pull those people together and get something going. That's how it works.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hi, my name is Lesha Oakes. In answer to your question about marginalized, I have read and over the years have been a member of a co-op, even before you. And one of the things that I have seen is that you bring the co-op to the people because they're not familiar with the concept. Also, unless you've lived somewhere or been in a community where you feel very noticeable, you feel isolated, you don't know the people, the rules, the regulations, the words to be used, you go to them. And what some people have done is they have actually taken the produce, the foods, to, for example, the high-rise that everybody refers to. You go there once a week. I'll be happy to set up something with you. We go there, find out what the people need, bring it to them, and let them understand that we're there for them.
Brilliant. Thank you.
Yeah. Is that another committee, Peter?
Sure. I don't decide who the committees are. You decide.
I'm not sure if this is a comment or a question, but it does relate to the discussion we've been having. And I wonder what it would take or if it's kind of being thought of to have very diverse representation of the community on the planning committee. So that seems like one way to really ensure that many different communities have a voice in how the co-op is planned and structured and the different needs. So I guess put that out there, and I'm very new to the, I don't know the answer to anything about the co-op, so I'll just turn that to you.
Well, that's a very good point, and I would encourage everybody to fill out the back of the agenda. It's a response sheet. It's asking you how we can stay in touch with you, what you want to do, how you want to do it, and when. And if you'll just fill this out and leave it, we'll pick it up and find it. But if the co-op can be anything like the diversity and representation in this room, it will be a tremendous success.
Just kind of, my name's Kara Tourette, I live in Hudson. Just kind of like a very quick piggyback on that comment. I think that more than just kind of waiting for that kind of diversity to come to you, I think it really needs to be sought out. And I know WGXC has done a really good job of that. Maybe talking to them about how that process worked, but creating some sort of council or, I think that's a really good idea, but it really needs to be active.
Would you be willing to help with that?
I would be willing to help with that.
Thank you.
Carol Clark. I think an interesting lesson can be learned from our farmers market, which many people think is very successful and are very supportive of it. When you go to the market, you don't usually see a very good representation of our community. It's basically white, middle class, rather affluent people who shop there. It has been suggested that at the market we have vendors that represent the community, but that hasn't happened. It has also been suggested that we have people cooking food, ethnic foods, to sell at the market, which would do two things. It would bring a great variety of people in, especially the community that is represented, you know, by the cook. Unfortunately, for some reason, the farmers market has resisted these ideas. And I think that in planning whatever your inventory is, and my question is, what kind of products you plan to sell, that the diversity of our population be represented so that you know, we have things. I mean, I know that at the farmers market, I have grown Mexican products, epazote and different things that you really don't even find in an ethnic market. And there weren't Hispanic people coming to shop. I mean, people would say, what is this? You know, and I think this is a situation, this room does not represent our community. This is only a part of our community. There are two communities in this room, and there are many more people. There are Hispanic people here, there are Black people. I mean, there are more people than what we have in this room. And I'll tell you that I've been in the food business in this city for 20 years. And, you know, there are a lot of people here. And there has been tremendous efforts to reach out into the community. And Mick Morelli was mentioned. And I want to tell you something that Mercedes did. That was very interesting. She sent home in the school bags of every child in the school a kind of a voucher or coupon to come to the market and get something like $5 worth of fruits and vegetables. Now there are hundreds of children in the schools, as you know, and maybe 75 people responded. I mean, it was astounding that people weren't coming out, and this was part of a tremendous outreach, but she has tremendous feelings about food democracy that she tried to promote and perpetuate through her market. And, you know, there are probably many reasons why it didn't work or why it failed or she couldn't continue. But what she did and a conversation with her would be, I think, very productive for you. Thank you.
Just wanted to follow up on a comment I heard before that the Hudson Food Co-op is about a year to a year and a half behind where the Philmont Food Co-op, which we've all read stories about how they're moving into the Stewarts over there. Is that an accurate statement? And just to put everything in perspective here, are we now talking about a co-op that would, in all likelihood, be opening its doors sometime next spring?
What my lawyer said. Because I'm an optimist, I don't want to wait a year and a half. But it's not on my shoulders alone. It's other people. So the more activity and involvement and questions and brilliance that I've seen in this room happens, the sooner we can do it. I wanted to do it yesterday.
There you go. My name's Sarah. I live in Germantown. I'm just curious, since you are planning on being in Hudson and it is an area that has pretty decent amount of farmers and growers in it, whether it's vegetable or meat or cheese or whatever, do you have any preliminary ideas for what the process will be for what growers or artisans you'll be choosing, like what your process will be for what growers you'll be taking from? Or
we're planning on having a special growers and producers meeting just like this one, so that we can avoid duplication, but at the same time,
get a system so that if one person can't supply lettuce on a day, we have a backup. That's, I'm looking for someone to help with that. And if there is anybody in this room who is like a Steve Hadcock at the CCE, for example, who has access to this, we would like to know about it. But it's something we're aware of, and the process has to be taken care of.
Very quickly, and I'm sorry to be rude to interrupt, but I've heard many times you saying, you know, if you want to be part of this, if you want to be part of that, if we could set another meeting date tonight, I would really appreciate it.
Thank you, because we want to do that. And my suggestion is 2 weeks from tonight, if we could get some kind of consensus on that, 2 weeks from tonight here. I'm sorry?
Time.
2 weeks, 6:30, same time, same place, 2 weeks.
June
28th.
Hi, my name is Shanika. I live in Hudson, New York. I've lived here for over a year now, and I'm excited about a food co-op because I don't have a car and I don't drive, so grocery shopping is pretty non-existent in my everyday life, which is hard. But something interesting that I kept hearing come up about the lack of representation of the different communities in Hudson. I've noticed this basically since I've moved here, this really kind of shut off from like what Warren Street kind of represents to like what is State Street or what's Union Street. And there are two different, completely different communities going on in Hudson with their own social systems. And the high rises is a good representation of that, but I think a really good outreach, just someone coming from a similar background to that, would be kind of price point. If they know that it's going to be cheaper and easier for them, you know, I read the frequently asked questions and I was excited to see that you guys are looking into having people on EBT and welfare allowed to shop at the co-op and accept that, because that's a really important thing, because that's a lot of these people can't find income here because of lack of employment. So they're on welfare or too young and whatever, like institutionalized things. They can't do that. So I really think that there should be a focus more on promotion and advertising and just education to these people, letting them know that, and just representations from the community, like their aldermen, their representatives, like people in their community that they respect, and let them know that this isn't some like bougie business, again, that's not for them in a place that they've lived in their whole lives.
I hope afterwards you'll come up and see me or Ellen or Anna.
She made a great point. Actually, that's what I wanted to touch on. As far as those from the high rise, and we're also leaving out Skyler Core, all those housing down in Hudson Terrace. 75% of the affordable housing in this county is in Hudson. And one of the things that I realized too is when you look at these people, I would say a great part of them are receiving food stamps. And if we're now saying to them that, okay, you'll have to pay a membership, whatever the membership fee is, $25, $100, whatever it is a definite deterrent for those people who are on food stamps to come into any kind of form of co-op to purchase. They just don't see the monetary gain, the benefit from doing that. And I just want to know how we would get past that hurdle.
Well, you raise a good point. The membership fee should never stand in the... The membership fee should never stand in the way of someone shopping. Anybody can shop at the co-op. If you want to be a member and you can't pay everything up front, there's a way. You know, it's not one hard and fast rule. There's a payment plan. If the payment plan doesn't meet your need, we'll talk about it. Everything's on the table with the membership fee. The dollars should not be a barrier to shopping and getting access to good food.
But Peter, you said you don't have to be a member to shop at the co-op, right?
Yes.
Right, Alan? This is just the 15-minute warning. We're gonna wrap up in 15 minutes, so get your comments in.
Hi, I'm Nancy Gordon. I work in Hudson. I have just a couple of fast questions. One, how large a facility is it going to be? And being a vegan, I'm wondering where you're going to get the fruits and vegetables during the non-growing season.
We're looking at space around 5,000 square feet, and there's plenty of fresh food available in what's called the non-growing season. They're primarily root vegetables, but root vegetables can combine with tempeh and tofu, for example, and seitan. It's all there. We don't have to invent anything here. And I wish you would become involved so we could become better informed.
I'll be happy.
Anybody else? That's Ellen back there.
I don't know that much about. Oh, I'm Sarah Kendall, and I don't know a whole lot about how other food co-ops function. And I'm curious when you say things like the members decide, or this is yours, or this is your voice. And I mean, obviously we're at a community listening meeting right now, and we're planning another date. But I'm curious in terms of thinking long term about infrastructure, what kinds of mechanisms are in place to actually. Maybe the planning committee, if that's kind of like a representative body. I'm curious to hear about the infrastructure of the co-op and how 200 voices get channeled.
Well, I'm a very bad bureaucrat. I'm not a desk jockey and I'm not a paper pusher. So bureaucracy and infrastructure are kind of hard for me, but I asked this question too of some co-op mentor. And she said, picture it like an upside-down pyramid. The broad band at the top is the community members. They tell the board of directors what to do. The board of directors tells the general manager what to do. The general manager manages the staff. But it also works the other way, so that there's a constant organic mix going on here. It's not a white, male, paternalistic hierarchy, thank God. It's hard to manage 200 voices, you're right, but it does work. And what we're planning to do, what I'll take away from this for myself is I'll prepare some kind of report on what I've heard. I'll circulate it among the people who are on the planning committee, and that planning committee can include anybody. And then we'll report back to the group at the next meeting and take it from there. And that's how it builds. It builds, it forms itself. This person takes four people and makes a committee. This person takes three people and makes a committee. Then the committees meet and they report back to the whole. It's a good structure. Does that help?
I just want to add one thing, just based on my experience with co-ops, not specifically, but you were asking the mechanism, so like annual meetings or there are... It's a voting mechanism, is my understanding. So there would be, however often there would be meetings, just in general as a co-op structure, in which people would vote about some aspects, and then other aspects would be from the general manager. So I just wanted to direct that.
Is there already a board of directors, or is that, or we're not there yet?
Not there yet.
But there is a planning committee. Sorry.
Yes.
Everyone can join.
Yes.
From my experience in Cambridge, this issue of leadership was worked out over a long period of time, but what it ended up being was a board of directors, but the board of directors met on a monthly basis. It was a public meeting with agenda, posted in advance, and if you had issues or wanted to discuss something, you came to those meetings. And that was the forum in which the board of directors worked and then passed along policy decisions to the general manager.
Hi, everybody. My name is Salman Khan. I live at 202 State Street. It's almost like 13 years in Hudson. And I'm really excited to see the happening. Whatever you guys decided is really exciting for all Columbia community, and we have so many Bengali community around here. So, and we expect too our Asian item also, and we are all Muslim, so we're always looking for halal food. Mm-hmm. Probably you guys know this word coming from, halal.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So hopefully, inshallah, you guys can provide some halal food also in this business when you start it.
Certainly.
And I had a question. This business, how many people going to be employed? And there is so many people around Hudson that have no job. Most people are unemployed, unemployment getting, some of them none. I'm the one unemployed right now, no job. So there is so many people there, they have a like personal, the backyard, vegetable growing. Some of them, they don't have enough room, like Hudson Tourist Department, they don't have room for that. So if we get season or non-season, provide the all kind of food item, then it's gonna be good for convenience, everybody. I remember the young lady over there, she said she don't have a car for drive shop, right? Walmart supermarket, or cross the river. So she can walk that far. Like, we have so many people have no car. They have to call taxi. Taxi company call, then ask for how many minutes you're coming. Say 5 minutes, they are not here for within 15, 20 minutes. It's so embarrassing. But we'll hopefully get a good service in the future. And also, as an example, for myself, I need 1 gallon of milk. So what I have to do? I have no car, I have to call taxi. How much I spend for the 1 gallon milk? And also, I need other stuff for the bathroom, use tissue, whatever. Then I have to spend $3-4 gas if I drive myself, getting from the shop, right? Or LV or Walmart. So spend gas, spend time, we save that. If we have a Hudson, we can walk there, save money too. So I pay like $3 for the gallon over there for milk, and I spend $3 for gas, it's not worth it. So hopefully we're gonna see that happen very soon. And thank you very much. And I'm expecting for halal food for Muslim community.
Yay.
Talking very loud. The next meeting is on June 28th at 6:30 p.m. Fill out the bottom of your form so you can get be involved. And thank you for coming.